This week, Happy Hour is sponsored by Dear Mob. Stay tuned to learn how you can win a free 9.7-inch 2018 iPad and an Apple Pencil. Did you see this news about KGI, Ming-Chi Kuo retiring from KGI?
Yeah, this is like...
like out of the blue.
This is probably the biggest change to like the Apple rumor scene since Apple said they were doubling down on secrecy and nothing happened.
Yeah, yeah. So this came from China Times, and the story is that Ming-Chi Kuo, who is the analyst that worked for KGI Securities, who had like all of these stories about what the future Apple hardware will be, like timing of when things come out and details based on supply chain, you know, sources, really specific stuff, has left KGI Securities. Will work for another firm, I believe, but not focus on Apple. Like, maybe not even cover Apple anymore.
Yeah, like, his main focus would... It sounds like he's going to a more general role covering many companies.
Yeah, which, to me, like, it kind of worries me because it makes me think that we won't get these... We won't see these big stories anymore. You know, there's no, like... If you remove KGI and you... You know, like only look at like certain big stories that come from like major media outlets. The other analysts are just kind of like guessing, it seems like. And they might have like some positive guess, but it's minor stuff, like not this big detailed stuff.
And KGI wasn't always accurate, but very, right. Very, very good.
Yeah.
I know there's this like community consensus of him just like being as bad as the rest of them, but I would disagree with that.
Oh, totally.
All the way to the bank.
Like, I was looking at our history of, like, stories with headlines that begin with KGI colon, and there are a lot of them, and most of them are, like, ballpark, you know? He might like, when he, like, editorialized with, I don't know, sometimes, like, pricing or, like release dates. Then
or that, names.
Yeah, sometimes names especially.
While like, guess the names and be way off.
Yeah, that could be fuzzy. But even stuff like the HomePod, like, it was the weekend before WWDC last year, I think, and then he was, like, the Siri speaker, as we all kind of called it, you know, will be shown at WWDC, which was correct. Like, and that was, you know, months before Apple planned to release it, before the delay. And there's just so many things. Like, we knew last year about the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus and 10 for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, and this year there's like the rumor is three iPhones, all, you know, iPhone 10 style, one 5.8-inch OLED, one 6.5-inch OLED, and then one 6.1-inch LCD. Like that's a KGI, you know, story.
That originates in KGI, exactly. And right. not like at the beginning of the year or in March. Like that's like, you know, October, November time.
Yeah.
You know, he had the iPhone 7 with no headphone jack, like mm-mm. a year ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The iPhone 10 stuff was before the iPhone 7 was announced. Like, and it was like a stainless steel and glass design, bezel-less, you know, before the iPhone 7 was announced.
Yeah.
Honestly unparalleled. Like, he's probably 50% of the entire Apple leak scene in the last, like, 5 years.
At least. Like, the only thing I could think of that was, like, definitely bad was when he said that the Apple Watch would get cellular but would not be able to do phone calls and messaging. I think he said it was just going to be like apps at first, and they were going to work on that for it before doing anything with communication. And as we discussed on the show, like, we didn't think that was correct. There were all these methods that Apple could do to pull off cellular, you know, communication with calling and messaging. And like that was like one thing that was off, but there's so many things that were just like he Ming-Chi Kuo was the source of the story for months before it became news, and it probably would have been a surprise otherwise, you know.
Yeah, and he's already, before he seems to have stepped down, he's already set us up for it this year with the you know, redesigned Apple Watch with 15% larger screen.
Yeah, exciting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like, oh, there's going to be a new looking Apple Watch later this year. Like, they always have like specific information and details. And if he was carrying on by June, he'd probably have like a drawing of what it looks like. Like, because he, and sometimes he has got stuff wrong, like a year in advance, but then 6 months later, he'll like fix it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so you can definitely point out ones that are like bad. He said that the iPhone 10 would have black chassis on every single model. Like, so much stuff. Like, if you want to double down on secrecy, I guess waiting for everyone to retire is a pretty good strategy.
I mean, part of me wonders, like, why is he making this move now? And there have been some recent KGI Securities notes for investors on Apple that were more vague. They were like,
they definitely changed format, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
He went from sending us like a PDF basically with detailed manufacturers, feature specs, percentages. And in the last like month or so, they sent us some ones which were like a different, literally a different format. It was like in the email itself. They were like blog post editorialized, kind of a rough, oh, Apple biggest problem is lack of AI, for instance. Like,
yeah.
And we didn't even cover some of those because they were so bad. But like, you could definitely feel like a shift in the water. And it was like, what's happened here? What's happened here?
Yeah.
Because
that's
the thing. Like, if you take like the HomePod one where he's talking about that, the Siri speaker at the time, he even said who made it. It was like Inventec, the same people are going to make iPods, they're going to make the Siri speaker. It probably won't be available in June, but there's a good chance to show it off. Like, I really don't like the sentiment where people like have a go at him for being so bad, because I think they... Like, people aren't into it as much as we are. And I think if you actually look at it properly, massive contribution to the community and overwhelmingly correct.
Yeah, yeah. I like that a KGI Securities analyst report was not like, I have a source that claims this, you know, it is the whole point of the report was if this supplier is making this component for the iPhone, for this purpose of the like this feature of the iPhone, you know, future iPhone, then you should invest in them or like pay attention to them. Like that's who these reports are for. We're for clients that were looking for like investment advice, basically.
Yeah, and for the suppliers to Apple, investing in Apple full stop.
Exactly.
In the manufacturers that make up the iPhone supply chain and everything like that.
Exactly.
So yeah, you couldn't even argue he was just making up stuff for like clickbait headlines. Like KGI isn't even a website. They told us don't link to our website when you cover these stories. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The ego, there's no ego. He's a huge name. He doesn't have a Twitter account. Like, is crazy, right? But he was reporting for a specific audience, and they sent it to us and a few other sites. And I think the only reason they did that is because they want more investors to pay for them. Like, that was the idea, right?
Yeah.
To raise their name and get actual people who want to invest money to join on. And he definitely delivered for our needs. Like, no question. And it's going to be pretty sad if we never get a KGI report again. Like,
yeah, yeah. Or a Ming-Chi Kuo report from somewhere, you know. And there are, like, other analysts that tend to pick up on details that pan out. Like, there's a story this week. I forget what the firm is, which firm it is. But they believe that this year the next iPhones will ship without the headphone jack adapter. So the 3.5mm to lightning adapter that Apple puts in the box. They've shipped it for 2 years in a row. And this one analyst firm says this year they won't. That's our prediction. It might be Barclay, but that's minor in compared to like these are what the three models of iPhones this year will be like spec wise, you know?
And KGI covered that as well. Like, remember last year he said they will support USB-C power delivery, but there won't be a faster charger in the box, and there won't be a wireless charger in the box. Apple will make a wireless charger, like, you know, bing, 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 like.
Yeah. So how do you feel about Ming-Chi Kuo's departure from KGI and like the future of you know, interesting rumors to talk about?
I mean, I guess some speculation could be that, I mean, and I've definitely seen this said, is that Apple stamped down and found and isolated his sources, fired, prosecuted, and whatever they did, you know, and now he's like stepping back because he doesn't have the same information. So maybe that's true. It's hard to know because we don't even see. Like, he's not going to go off and write clickbait stories for some random website now. He's probably going to disappear and maybe cover other companies. Like, and it'd be pretty cool if he pops in every now and again with a Apple focus leak, but it definitely doesn't sound like it's going to be with the same velocity and quantity as what we've come to expect.
Yeah, the thing about the theory that maybe sources have been removed from the supply chain that were talkative is like, it seems like to me that there were so many sources at like a diverse amount of supply, like suppliers, that it was like every single supplier was a part of his sourcing, that it you know, it would need to be like a widespread sweep. Maybe that happened. Like, I don't know. But he also did other stories too. Like, there were stories about like Samsung phones and you know, other Android phone makers. So it wasn't just Apple, but it was definitely like Apple focused. And the most interesting things came, you know, were about Apple.
Maybe he saw the writing on the wall and, like, some of his big sources had been stamped down on, and he felt like it's not worth fighting this anymore, if you see what I mean, and then he's going to diverse and move into some other companies where they're not, the supply chains aren't quite as locked down.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's definitely true that we haven't seen, like, outside of KGI, we haven't seen, like, the same rush of schematics, dummy leaks, you know, kind of know what the phones are going to be, but we haven't seen, like, the dimension stuff. And you compare it to this time last year, we knew exactly what the iPhone 10 looked like this time, like, last year.
It was getting...
any variety, all designed, exact millimeters, like, so much stuff.
Yeah, last year, this time, we were having trouble deciding, like, should we actually publish the story about this schematic that we've seen 10 times before? It's, like, a slightly different angle on it, but, you know, is it still news? And, you know, looking back, I think the answer every time is yes. Like, that part of the story is how much is leaking, like, what velocity, you know? And, like, retrospectively, we can look back and be like, wow, compared to that a year ago, like, we had a new iPhone leak every day. And now we've got, like, KGI description and then some, like, Bloomberg reporting that, you know, says that is true, basically, you know, indirectly.
And that's about it. Like, that's not even be like blasé. Like, there isn't as much this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if it wasn't for KGI, we wouldn't know what the next iPhone would be.
Yeah. From like a pure, like, fan perspective, I think, like, if you like surprises and you, like, long for the day of having an iPhone event, an Apple event, like, with actual surprises, with things that haven't leaked, you know, like imagine if the iPhone 4 didn't like leak in a, you know, get lost in a bar and get picked up by Gizmodo and, you know, was basically, like, unveiled before the event. And that would have been a pretty big surprise, I think, at the time. I think, like, absent KGI, maybe we have something like that in the future.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably heading back towards a more unknown Apple, whether that's because Apple's been, it's like multiple factors, isn't it? It's right, Apple's been clamping down, some other big names have left the industry as much, and now you've got KGI, like, stepping back. So
yeah,
I definitely think it will be less thing, and I like that on one hand. Like, I like surprises, but obviously I also like talking about rumors and stuff, so and rumors, and not just, like, random rumors that people make up, like ones that actually had, like, more than a dice roll of being correct. Like,
plausible, like, rumors, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, we'll see. Maybe he moves to another company, carries on doing massive Apple leaks, but maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, Ming-Chi Kuo already had, like, this massive, like, layer of mystery about him before this. Like, there's not, like, you know, Ming-Chi Kuo holding a press conference every week with this stuff. You know, it's all kind of mysterious. Like, who is Ming-Chi Kuo? But, and now it's even more mysterious. It's like, will there be another Ming-Chi Kuo source story or not? You know, and maybe not.
Will someone fill his shoes?
Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's move on and talk about Apple's earnings this week. So
to quote Elon Musk, boring.
Yeah, I was gonna say let's talk about the keynote or the call where Tim Cook said, "Excuse me, next, boring, bonehead questions are not cool, next." But that wasn't Tim Cook. That was Elon Musk. Tesla call.
If people don't know what we're talking about, go and listen to the Tesla earnings call. It was hilarious.
And like minute 36 is where it breaks down, and that's of an hour-long phone call. Before we get to Apple earnings, like, that whole thing was amazing in real time, but then like I saw on Twitter later that the YouTuber who basically took over the call and kept Elon's attention, like, had just tweeted Elon Musk like a day before and was like, "Hey, can I please be on the call to represent retail investors?" And then he said, "Okay." And that was it.
And this hour long call full of, like, all these, you know, professional investment institutions was about 35 minutes of it. It was just Elon and this YouTuber talking about stuff. Because Elon basically just dismissed any other question. You can't describe how good it is. Like, you just have to hear it for yourself.
It's literally the same analyst from the same firms that populate the Apple earnings calls, you know, with Q&A, except this time the CEO of the company went off the rails and, like, said what we were all thinking. But I have to say, like, you know, it's funny and, like, haha, but if Tim Cook did that, I would be very worried for his safety as, like, the CEO of Apple, you know, like, his job security.
I don't want to divert into a Tesla podcast, but if clearly Elon doesn't care about financials, so he shouldn't be on the Financial Whirling School.
Yeah, like, yeah. Go and listen. Go and listen to the Electric podcast from our sister site, electric.co, for a whole talk about that. But yeah, even looking at like Steve Jobs on earnings calls, which he wasn't on every one, but he was on a lot of them. I think your reference to like his most off the rails move was like, I think like a pre-prepared remarks about like Android tablets being bad.
Yeah, because it was around the time when everyone was saying that 7-inch tablets are going to rule the world because they're going to be cheaper and better and how can the iPad fare? And Jobs just like, it's the sandpaper story. It's like, people are going to get these tablets. Their apps are going to be so fragmented and the screen's so tiny, people are going to have to sandpaper their fingers just to be able to touch the screen.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And he has a few, and that whole call, it's not just that segment. Like, he's miffed, right? Like, he has a go at even some of the interviews, but he doesn't, like, cut people off. He just, like, in his classic, you know, harsh way, explains what he thinks is the truth.
Yeah, the thing
he didn't go, boring!
The thing that I liked about, like, the Steve Jobs and his, like, harsh, direct commentary is that even if it wasn't prepared remarks, like it sounded steady and focused and like it was convincing. Whereas like the Elon Musk stuff was like we all think that the financial calls are boring because that's not like our racket, you know, but it wasn't like super, I don't know, it wasn't like the most intellectual like rebuttal against an earnings call. Like it was just, you know,
it was very like childish, really.
Yeah, it was like immature.
It wasn't professional. Like even if Jobs is having a go at you, like he's not disrespecting you. He was just like, he was disrespecting the idea or the concept, right? Like,
right.
If you raise the idea that 7-inch tablets are going to rule the world, he would like destroy that, but with like actual reasons rather than just like, I don't want to talk about this. See you later.
Yeah. Can you imagine Steve Apple's Jobs with Twitter? Yeah.
Apple's earnings.
Yeah, Apple's earnings. Let's see. So Apple, they reported revenue of $61.1 billion, and they reported profit. So they earned $13.8 billion on that revenue. A lot of money. They sold 52.2 million iPhones, 9.1 million iPads, and 4.07 million Macs. And that compares to, I think the same quarter a year ago, they had sold 50, like here's the story. A year ago, they sold, like 50.7 million iPhones.
Yeah,
so
like slightly less.
Yeah, slightly less. Yet the, everyone was pleased with like iPhone revenue specifically. And it seems to be that even though iPhones were kind of like ballpark range the same, they made a lot more money selling iPhones, and you know, hey, that says that the iPhone 10, the expensive one, is selling well. And they made comments to like back that up. They don't break out iPhones by unit; they just say how many in total they've sold. But we take away from this clearly, like directly and indirectly, that the iPhone 10 is selling well. Continue, like still selling well.
Yeah, and like obviously, this is amongst the kind of bearish analysts before that were, you know, all the iPhone 10 is not saying doom story, all of that baloney, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, like, so the iPhone 10 story to me is like, it's like the source of a lot of it is that there was at least one report that said Apple's going to stop making the iPhone 10 before the next iPhone comes out, which the idea there is that they have enough to sell through the next phone and they're ramping up production of the new phone sooner. But the big idea there is that they're not going to sell the iPhone 10 next year too. They're going, you know, in the fall, they're going to discontinue it, which is like what people get stuck on, and replace it. They're not going to sell it for $100 less because like at least one report, I think that the next 5.8 inch OLED iPhone will cost $100 less as they make room for the bigger model, you know.
And it's exceptional for the most expensive model to be the best selling.
Yeah,
because obviously before this cycle, it would be the Plus, mm-hmm. right? And with iPhone 7 Plus, you know, Cook said that there was a more of a proportional mix towards the Plus, but still, you know, the normal 4.7 inch phone was the most popular model,
right? Yeah,
and obviously carries on ever since they introduced the Plus.
Yeah, so I think it's people, including analysts, taking the idea that Apple stops selling the iPhone 10 in the fall and replaces it and doesn't sell it for $100 less. Confusing that, or like even intentionally, with Apple's going to stop selling the iPhone 10. That's part of it. Another part of it is just like, is Apple selling as many iPhone 10s as they want to? Unknown.
Yes.
And then in this situation, it's like they might have wanted to sell more, but they're selling more than they had sold like pluses last year, you know. And the plus was never as expensive as the iPhone X is. So for them to continue selling more of the tens, they must, you know, it must be doing well, or the eights are doing very badly.
Yeah, because some of these stories about like Apple cutting back orders, there's a narrative where Apple thought they were going to sell even more, right? Mm. And then now it's cut back to like a reasonable level that's still good and, you know, solid and solid like 3% unit growth, 16% revenue growth. But maybe they thought the iPhone 10 would be even more of a hit, and they were going to sell even more of them, right? Like maybe they were expecting to do 60 million iPhones before Christmas, for instance. And then it kind of petered off a little bit, so they pushed down to like 52 or whatever. So I don't think these stories are not necessarily completely incorrect, but it's like
there's nuance there, like, that
consequences and the inferences could be misconstrued
easily, and there is nuance there that if ignored, you just sound like an idiot talking about them. Like, you know, like,
and,
I don't,
and this time next year, I don't expect the trend to continue. I don't expect this time next year for the most expensive phone to be the most popular.
Yeah,
because the mix is going to change, right? They're going to bring more of the cool features from the iPhone X that people want down the line, including on this $700 6.1-inch phone, LCD phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, assuming those rumors are correct, that's going to be the most popular phone, the 6.1-inch one. I just can't see how, like, the iPhone X Plus, maybe more expensive than this year's iPhone, is not going to be the best-selling. Whatever the iPhone X replacement is, it's going to be the higher-end option. I think the iPhone X, the new iPhone X, wait, 11, whatever you want to call it, will be, like, the sales proportion of what the Plus normally, of, you know, what the Plus did like last year, if you see what I mean. Like that mix between that and the main, what I would call the main phone, which is this LCD replacement. Because the LCD phone's basically going to sit in the normal iPhone price range, you know, like where the iPhone 8 is, the $600, $700 price point.
Mm-hmm.
But it will have a bezel-less screen, Face ID, and it will have most of the attractive things. And then what will happen this time next year is that average selling price will fall, but units will be higher. That's what I'm guessing, right? Because they'll sell more of the cheaper models.
Yeah, yeah. Which is like, depending on what you care about. Like, in no quarter is Apple having a bad quarter where they're not making a lot of money. But like this year, if people were focusing on units, then you'd say, that's tricky. But because they have the fact that the iPhone X costs more, they can sell the same amount of phones but make more money from it. Like, people are happy. Like, the market response was positive, even though it was like within Apple's guidance, I believe. But next year, like, say the profit isn't as high, but there are more unit sales. You know,
profit is the same, but it's just offset differently, right? Like, rather than selling more expensive phones but less of them, you sell more phones that are slightly cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it just carries on the line, just with different ratios.
Yeah, and you could assume that the iPhone X2S Plus, whatever you want to call it, you know, the 6.5-inch OLED version will be very expensive. Like, maybe it has the $1,000 price, and the, you know, the X2S, whatever it's called, has a $900 price, or maybe it's $900 and $1,100, or, you know, $910.50 or so. You know, we don't know what the breakdown is going to be, but there'll be, you know, it'll be a whole mix. It'll just be a totally different set of iPhones to be sold. So. But yeah, I mean, and then moving on from iPhones, like, iPad was about the same, you know, like nothing big happened in iPad, you know, year over year, I guess. And then like no one really pays attention to Mac, you know, so.
Services became their number two business in revenue terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which follows there, cause they said, didn't they, they're going to grow to $50 billion by 2020. So they're on track.
Yeah.
The HomePod thing was, I got excited for a minute.
So with HomePod, there was one thing that we were looking for, which was, is Tim Cook going to say when HomePod goes on sale in France and Germany, right? Those are the next two countries to get HomePod in the spring, which means sometime before June, like 21st or so. Didn't get an answer there, which my theory is that if AirPlay 2 is coming with iOS 11.4, then maybe they're waiting for, like, literally that release to also release the HomePod in more countries. So that way you don't have HomePod going for, you know, being available in countries without features again. You know, it'll have all the features in these other countries from day one.
Yeah, and you can roll, you know, the necessary language files just into the update.
Sure, yeah. If you're close enough, then just, you know, hold off a little bit. But then Tim Cook said, like, new features coming to HomePod later, you know, Soon?
Soon, he said. That was what he said. New features and new regions for HomePod coming soon.
Yeah, which regions we knew, unless they have more regions in mind than France and Germany. But features, like my interpretation of that really is that he's referencing multi-room playback, stereo pairing, and AirPlay 2 features, you know, as they exist. But you're more optimistic than I am, right?
I mean, I want to be optimistic.
Okay.
No other explanation. That clearly means that the HomePod will have a dedicated section at WWDC that you can talk about. 500 new features for it, and coming soon means next month. No other way to read into that sentence, right? Nothing.
Yeah. See, the realistic part of me thinks that if he meant that, then like looking back at the WWDC Apple TV or tvOS announcement last year, like they punted all the way to the fall for that, and there wasn't really much. It was like a new hardware. Which is big, but not like feature wise. I feel like if he was referencing what was coming at WWDC, he wouldn't say coming soon. Then it would be
he
like
he wouldn't have said anything at all.
Yeah.
So there is that has crossed my mind, but also there's been a lot of criticism about it not having enough appeal. So
we should just tweet him and ask him
a little reference, like we're working on it. Yeah. And obviously, he didn't detail anything specific, but I'm sure a lot of that statement is referring to multi-room and stereo pairing.
Yeah, which you can't try yet because there's no HomePod beta, but those feature equivalents are in iOS and tvOS, like at least, you know, AirPlay 2 multi-room playback. And so we really assume that also means that when iOS 11.4 comes out, then the equivalent of that for HomePod will be out, and then those will be the features, you know, that it gets, so... which would be welcome. Like I expect at the latest that 11.4 comes out like on the first day of WWDC, you know?
Yeah. Like a June release. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that Monday, if not the Monday, then like maybe the Tuesday or so.
Because what you have to remember is that almost all of the engineering focus will be on the iOS 12 and macOS and all the new software, you know, the major updates. Mm-hmm. They can't carry on doing point releases forever. Like
yeah.
Once like you go through June, with the last like tight window for a new software, like a new features software update.
Yeah.
And then from June to September, it's just bug fixes on iOS 11. And then, you know, all focus is on 12.
Like if AirPlay 2 doesn't make it into 11.4, then part of me thinks, what's the point of 11.4? There won't be one until AirPlay 2 is ready.
They could do messages in iCloud 11.4 only.
Yeah. 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 AirPlay 2. Yeah. Which would be silly. Like then you get like 11.5 and it just gets further and further out. It's possible. I hope that's not the case, though. I think that both are doing fine in beta. Like I think AirPlay 2 might be in better shape than messages in iCloud. I don't know, but you know, I'm optimistic that both features will be released in 11.4 at the beginning of June.
What you have to remember is that iOS 12 beta 1 is done. Like internally to Apple, it's frozen. Like
yeah,
they might be doing some bug fixes and stuff, but the seed that hits developers' hands on June 4th straight after the keynote is, you know, basically baked already. Like they do them in advance, like 3 weeks or whatever.
So a lot of what you see at WWDC is like you see betas presented on like pre-release versions on stage that are like beta twos of what developers get.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and even the developer APIs, right? They say all this stuff and we've got these 10 APIs coming in a future seed. Like that. Because they, you know, they have to freeze the public releases way earlier, and obviously internally they're working on like the you know the latest nightly builds.
Yeah, like 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time, and I mean that's how they showed iPad off with iOS 7, but then it wasn't until like the second beta when you actually had an iPad beta at all, which is awkward. Yeah, so HomePod, I mean, and they're not going to break out sales, and they're not going to say it's a wild success because it's a very soft launch with a lot of complicated factors that are disappointing. And it's only available in 3 countries, and that's kind of what I expected from like HomePod on the call was nothing about praising how well it's doing, you know.
Yeah, they basically said we've launched it,
yeah,
and then we'll see how it goes. Like, that's basically the implication.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and then you know, as always lately, it's a big trend that they call out the wearables category, which includes Apple Watch, AirPods, and Beats products. Which I wonder if they, like, if it's, you know, they say Beats, do they put the Beats pill in the wearables category? That's a speaker.
No, because it's the other products business, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean,
and then wearables is a subsection of other products.
That's what I would think, but they don't
split out exact revenue numbers for the wearables. Yeah. But when they report like 50% year-over-year growth, they're talking about specifically wearables. So I would not say that the Beats Pro is included in that.
Okay, but they do mean Beats headphones, like all Beats headphones.
They mean AirPods, Beats headphones, and watch. Basically.
I mean, you could have the Beats Pro like on your shoulder, like boombox style, you know, and that totally counts. This week, Happy Hour is sponsored by Dear Mob, and for a limited time, Happy Hour listeners can get Dear Mob iPhone Manager's latest version for free, normally $60. Dear Mob iPhone Manager is the world's first iOS manager to transfer iPhone and iPad data to your Mac with U.S. military-grade encryption. It helps you to secure your vital data, such as photos, videos, contacts, files, and more, and protect your privacy from leaks. You can download and use the app for free for one Mac with full features now. And to enter the iPad giveaway, check the link in the show notes or on 9to5Mac.com. Thanks to Dear Mob for sponsoring Happy Hour. And so a few months ago, like late February, they were saying that the wearables business for Apple is approaching the size of a Fortune 300 company. And this was the milestone. Now they say it is the size of a Fortune 300 company. And they haven't changed AirPods, you know, in a while ever. And there's nothing like, you know, we don't see that there's anything crazy going on with any Beats products, you know, outside of like the ordinary. And so you have to presume that the Apple Watch is doing quite well. Like and we see that too. Like the Series 3 is popular. It's a big upgrade device, and that sounds like it continues to be true. For me personally, there's no benefit of knowing like how well the watch is selling really, but it's nice to hear in vague terms that is doing well as a business.
Well, this is the thing, right? I don't judge Apple on how well they make money.
Right.
I'm not going to love Apple more because they made more money. I think if they were on the brink of bankruptcy, then I'd care a lot more because I want them to stay around.
In general,
they're a big company. But at the scale that they're at, it doesn't really bother me if they have a bad quarter or a good quarter. Like, even a bad quarter, they're perfectly fine, right? They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, from a customer perspective, one thing I do want is for developers to make great Apple Watch apps.
Yes.
You know, and I think it does help for Apple to say, developers, we're selling a lot of these things, make the apps, they will be used. But of course, as we know, like 70% of that story is that Apple needs to make better developer tools for the watch.
Let's move on before we go down that rabbit hole. I can't do it again for another week on a row because it makes me so annoyed.
I saw that you unearthed Apple's announcement about like watch OS 2 and fully native apps, and that really irked you this week, so I'm sorry for
that was rough.
On the call they also talked about ARKit. Amazing. Do you use any ARKit apps in your life?
No, I download them to play with them and then never open them again.
I play Pokemon Go every day, but I use it without the AR mode. Like, there's two AR modes in Pokemon Go. There's like have your camera show what's around you, and then there's like use actual ARKit, which makes the game even harder because then you've got to like find a surface and fiddle around with it. But I just use
Pokemon Go's success was not because of ARKit. I mean, it launched before ARKit was out.
Yeah. And I don't think that people are using the AR mode and like having, I think it's just like Pokemon Go. It's fun because of like the collecting stuff and the challenges. But
yeah,
although I realize that it's not something that everyone plays every day now. ARKit, like it, part of me thinks like, okay, cool. If there's a future there, then Apple's going to be way ahead of ahead of it, and they're going to be ready. But then another, like a bigger part of me thinks, you know, what if this is kind of all for nothing? I'm not sure like what we're getting at with this. And Tim Cook is very excited.
I think it
about
eventually
ARKit.
Builds into a new product category. And we're just in the very like early playing around with getting some experimentation in. Maybe there'll be a few hit apps that explode, and then we'll just kind of bob along. And it's like open research and development for their future headset or whatever you want to call it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's this whole category of like it's like R&D out in the open, you know, of like we know that Apple is doing something with cars and self-driving cars, and but we don't know what yet. And it's like all of that is just mystery right now. And I feel like ARKit, like Tim Cook's very excited about it. And that's almost comical because like the what you get in return, unlike it. And I know there can be like specific specialized uses, almost like Google Glass is like you could, you know, present Google Glass as like a successful product with certain use cases. But I feel like ARKit is like kind of like that right now where yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's not one that I've got an appreciation for yet. And then Apple's they're doing a $100 billion buyback program, so they're buying back $100 billion of. This is all over my head at this point. But
you know what I want to say now?
What is that?
Boring.
Bonehead questions are not cool. Next, but that relative to their existing buyback program, like so far, this is a major increase, and it's fueled by the corporate tax reform, where they bring back money from overseas without being taxed on it so high. They like the rate that they're being taxed on it, and so they can
Access their money from abroad without paying a fortune on it, and so then they can redistribute it into investment, new campus, and some back to shareholders.
Yeah, that's a hard one to pitch, but you know, like to, but it's fine for an investor call, and you know, it is what it is. So
yeah, I mean, ignoring the political implication of that. It's good for the company, like for the business.
It's for Tim Cook himself, like as the CEO of Apple, it's been a funny thing to talk about because like his responsibility is to get the best deal for Apple, the company. And he's had to go out of his way to say, as a company, we have no position on, we're not talking about the personal tax reform that has happened, you know, like how tax rates change. He said personally he doesn't like that policy, but the corporate half of it is what they advocated for and got, you know. And like if you look at Tim Cook the person, is like how he fundraised in the 2016 election. Like he had a personal fundraiser for Hillary Clinton for president, and then he had a personal fundraiser for Paul Ryan to win his reelection, you know. And it wasn't that Paul Ryan was like in a tight race. It was just that he wants to like have a hand, you know, he had certain interests that aligned, you know, with Paul Ryan, specifically tax reform. And they got what they wanted. And this is what they're saying that we get back from it is $100 billion stock buyback program. So there we go. I'm glad that you were able to write our story about that because I'm not sure I would have been able to get through it with any meaningful contribution to
our
readers.
It's very dry.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, anything else interesting from the earnings call that we got this week?
I think that's about it. Okay. Oh, and the only thing I would say is that guidance for next quarter is better than expected. Yeah. I think the analyst estimate is the low end of Apple's range because obviously for revenue they report like two numbers, a minimum and a maximum.
Yeah.
And the analyst consensus was at the low end. It was the lower bound of what Apple guided. So investors are very happy because it obviously suggests they're going to beat it because it's going to be generally higher than the lower bound. Like if you're going somewhere in the middle as the average, then it's going to be higher than what the analysts were originally predicting.
Yeah, yeah. One more thing I do want to call out is there's very little any like straight up news out of these things, but they often do say like something will come to this country soon. And this time it is that Apple Pay will come to Norway, Poland, and Ukraine in the coming months. So in the first earnings call, I think it was that we learned about Brazil, and then that came to be. And now we have Norway, Poland, and Ukraine that will get Apple Pay in the coming months. So that's our news from the call. I want to talk about AirPlay 2 now. So we mentioned a little bit about the 11.4 beta and that AirPlay 2 is in it. And we hope it'll come with, you know, 11.4. The thing is they Apple showed AirPlay 2 off as part of what everyone assumed was going to be iOS 11.0 in September. And then that's it. But it wasn't there. And then they included it in some future betas, but then didn't ship it when those betas became like the release. And so the concern is that could happen with 11.4, that maybe June comes, we get 11.4 and there's no AirPlay 2 in it. Too bad. But the difference in that beta and the older beta is that AirPlay 2 from the start was like a certain set of features, but that every beta didn't actually include. And I think with 11.4, for the first time, we're seeing all of those features like actually working. And the big one for me is the ability to talk to Siri on one device and control audio playback on another device. And so this week I tweeted out like some screenshots of like how it looks, and like I was really impressed with what it does. So for example, after the earnings call, I was able to tell Siri on my iPhone to play the Apple earnings call podcast, which is a thing that exists, on the Apple TV. And then with both the iPhone and the Apple TV running 11.4 beta, it worked. The Apple TV turned on because of HDMI CEC, where the Apple TV got the signal as power, turned on the TV, everything lit up. And the audio stream started playing like from Siri from the phone without my phone playing it peer-to-peer, like sending it to the Apple TV. It's like a streaming, you know, direct kind of thing. It played on the Apple TV.
Yeah, so it's not only playing like locally in AirPlay into it, it's launching the client on the Apple TV and running it from there.
Yeah. And then the next step was I changed over to music. I said, you know, play music on the Apple TV in the living room, and it did that. And then I said, now play this in the studio too. And so I have an Apple TV in the studio room, and then that one began playing the same audio, like the multi-room audio stuff, which we knew about. It's just that we haven't really gotten to try it out before, and it's working now, and it's working quite well. And it's like, that's the future that app. Like, I don't think they were super specific about how this all works, you know, but that's what will come when AirPlay 2 is released. And you can't do this with HomePod yet in any way, because HomePod doesn't have a beta. And that's where it's going to be like most impressive is, you know, tell Siri on your iPhone or iPad or Apple TV to play this in the other room, and then say, and add it to this speaker. And, you know, you can, it's kind of like the Sonos experience, but it's with Siri instead of like using an app. And it's not just Sonos speakers. Like, actually Sonos speakers are included in that in some cases, but it's going to be any AirPlay 2 speaker, which is HomePod, Apple TV, and Apple TV 4K speakers, and then like future AirPlay 2 speakers, you know, that are released.
Yeah, that is so cool. And this is the kind of thing we were like hoping for, right? And yeah, we talked about this in like earlier podcast episodes, like play this upstairs, play this in every room. And that's why it's part of home. That's why AirPlay 2 is like a subsidiary of like HomeKit, right? Because that's why they appear in HomeKit. You sign them rooms.
Yeah, so that's the key. Is the room assignment is how it knows where to play it.
Yeah, because say if you're doing like, you know, housework and you've got a HomePod downstairs and upstairs, playing music downstairs, you walk upstairs, you know, say play it upstairs too, and then you could tell it to, it will start doing it, and then you could also tell it to like turn off the downstairs, and it'll do that as well. Like,
yep,
so elegant.
Yep. And so the Siri input can come from the iPhone, the iPad, or the Apple TV. I assume that the HomePod will be another option. Like, you can tell your HomePod to play this in two rooms, and that will work. I can't test it yet, though, so, you know, no way to know for sure.
It definitely will. Like, there's no way it doesn't work.
But you cannot do it from the watch, even on beta, from Siri from the Apple Watch. And you cannot do it from Siri from the Mac, even on beta. Those two Siris don't do it.
Well, the Mac doesn't surprise me, because
yeah, there's no HomeKit anyway.
Yeah, the watch is slightly weird because you think it could just relay the request through the phone.
Yeah, right. You think that would work even independently? Like, you can control HomeKit stuff, so you would think that it can relay the message through the network anyway. But
yeah,
but
the
watch won't do it yet, even on beta. Part of me thinks like because it's watchOS 4.3.1 beta and not watchOS 4.4. So like maybe there's like a 4.4 where that would work in the future, maybe, fingers crossed. I don't know.
I think that's stretching and just hoping.
Me too. But you know, you can do it from at least the iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV. So you can tell you, and that's what they showed at WWDC looking back, was play this song in the living room and the dining room, and that's Siri on the Apple TV, and it does that. Now something about AirPlay 2 that's a little bit confusing is that certain AirPlay 2 speakers have clients for the audio. So there's Apple Music, there's music, and then there's podcast. Those are the two things that you can do with Siri. And so you can tell Siri on the iPhone to play on the Apple TV or HomePod, and it does it directly like on that device instead of like from the iPhone to it. But I imagine like whenever Sonos has AirPlay 2 support, I don't know how it'll work. Like, we can't test it yet either, but there's no like podcast client. Like, what is it called on the HomePod? Like Air Podcast?
And yeah, Air, that's the like the bundle name that maybe outside sees.
Right. And so without that being there on you know, Sonos, then I guess it is kind of reliant on like a client device, not just as like...
Yeah, then it acts like current AirPlay, right? Where
yeah.
It just streams to it.
Yeah, and you can
But even in that case, it's still better because it integrates with whole home audio. You can mm-hmm. do, you can do pairing between like a Sonos and a HomePod, like homogeneously, and you get the benefits of it just being a longer cache time, so you don't have as many dropouts, and it's faster to respond. Like you can press pause, and it will pause instantly versus the current AirPlay standard, which has like a 2 second delay and it feels like forever.
Yeah, exactly. So if you do it where the speaker itself has an app and a client that plays directly, then like the phone can go off the network forever and like until the audio is playing, it will keep going. If you do it like the old peer-to-peer way, then you still have benefits where it's a much longer stretch of time where it buffers a whole lot more. And then if you hit play and pause, it's like, I sent you a video example, but it's like, I mean, how would you describe it? I don't know if it's instant, but it's faster than
it's not exactly instant, but it's way, way better. Like in like a quarter of a second versus 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing for me is that AirPlay 2, the first thing I think about it is like, man, what's going on? It's delayed. It's taking forever. Like, can Apple not get it right and figure it out? But I think that whenever it actually is released and like working in shape, it's going to be very impressive, like worth the wait. I think it's not fully appreciated, like how much is encompassed within AirPlay 2, like what it all is. It's not just like AirPlay, but better. It's like AirPlay with a million more features, you know? Before AirPlay 2, a lot of the stuff would require a Mac and using iTunes on a Mac or PC, like up and running and to share this audio everywhere with like mouse input. And now it's like Siri input without, you know, all from iOS basically. So just trying that out this week really impressed me. And it's so like, I can't wait for the HomePod to be in that category. And, last week Sonos said like what speakers they will support with AirPlay 2, and it's the Sonos One, the Play Bass, and the Play 5. So any Sonos speaker with a little
touch control. The new Play 5.
Yeah, with touch controls and not like clicky buttons. They said that has enough horsepower to drive it. And then if you pair with an older speaker, like you have like a Play 1 and a Sonos One paired as like left-right stereo, then you can target it as one speaker with AirPlay 2. Or if you like start playback on an AirPlay 2 Sonos speaker and then hold on the play button on another one, it'll pull in the audio. And that's where it gets tricky. But like they're doing their best to support a new feature like years back before it was ever considered. And then today we got a media invite to an event from Sonos on June the 6th in San Francisco, 2 days after WWDC, I believe, where they're going to reveal what we expect is a new soundbar. So they have a speaker called the Play Bar, and it's old, and it's like a traditional soundbar, you know, a wide, thin speaker that goes in front of your TV. They have a newer one called the Play Bass, which is like almost like a stand, speaker stand. It's like flat and deep. And neither one of those supports voice, but the Play Bass does support like touch input and AirPlay 2. But neither supports voice. So we think that this new one will support Amazon Alexa control, and then obviously be an AirPlay 2 speaker. So I think that'll be exciting. We'll see yet another AirPlay 2 speaker timed maybe 2 days after AirPlay 2 actually comes out. So I'm excited.
Yeah, so the Sonos event is June 6th and mm-hmm. WWDC is June 4th.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed, 11.4 would be out on June the 4th.
Right.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and I also had a feeling that the way that the Sonos announcement originally went was Sonos said that they would support, this was last year, AirPlay 2 in 2018, but then that was whenever AirPlay 2 was assumed to be coming out in 2017, like, you know, hopefully with HomePod coming in December, and then it all got pushed back. So I thought that surely Sonos' support for AirPlay 2 would get pushed back even more than like Apple's here it is, but it sounds like they're actually like doing real world testing, and they've rolled out certain speakers as not AirPlay 2 compatible, and they've said which ones will be AirPlay 2 compatible. And with that release, like, you know, their event right after that, it sounds like maybe it could be coming sooner than like December of this year.
Yeah, it sounds like they could be ready to roll alongside Apple's release of it,
which is to me impressive because like we know about AirPlay 2 speakers from Apple TV, which is very cool. Like if you've got a nice soundbar or surround sound system, then that's a serious AirPlay 2 speaker in your home. But you know, like TV speakers can be kind of mad, but like the ones that you can attach as like your entertainment system are impressive. And then we know about HomePod, but other than that, it's like a list of speaker makers that are committed, but then we have no idea what models or when they're coming. Like one is Beats, and we haven't seen anything from Apple on like what that is yet. The only one I can think of is the Safe and Sound smoke detector from First Alert. Like they say that will be an AirPlay 2 speaker, but that isn't like a HomePod competitor, you know, kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
That is a weird thing.
It's neat, but it's not like in the same ballpark, I think. It's just like finally all this stuff is coming together, and in tweeting out like the screenshots of like, how it works, it was kind of new to me. Like I wasn't positive that I knew that, and I had to go back and like find something I wrote in November where I wrote like, we think this is how it will work, we just can't test it yet, and now we can test it and confirm it. And so it was like learning it all over again. But the feedback I got from sharing was just like, people didn't know that was a thing that was coming. And now that we can test it, like it's, you know, way more visible and it works really well. Like it's a major upgrade to how AirPlay is. Now the big question mark, as we discussed like last week and before, is what happens with Airport Express, you know, nothing new to report there, but,
yeah, I think people should, stop wishfully thinking that that's actually going to get an update.
Like, yeah.
I know we saw it in that beta, but Apple's messaging on the Wi-Fi thing was not a positive outlook for it.
You know, if I had to bet a small amount, I would bet that it comes. I would be more surprised if it doesn't come. Like it feels right that it was there in the beta. It got removed, but so did stereo pairing UI. And to me, I think it got removed because they were like hiding it if you don't have the firmware, and no one has the firmware, you know. I think I mentioned before, but like I think that if it got removed independent of HomePod stereo pairing getting removed, then I'd be like, oh yeah, they pulled that back. They didn't mean to include that. But I feel like that's enough of a sign that it's going to come, and I would actually be more surprised if it didn't come.
I have thought about this since we spoke about it last week. I think the feature was in development, and then a notice came from above that they're going to drop AirPort completely, maybe around like the March timeframe, and then they just abandoned it and stopped working on it, and it will never come out.
Yeah, yeah.
That is how I have it in my head. And that would explain why it shows up. And we've even seen like some code references to like AirPort support in there. But then I just can't see them adding a major new feature to a product they've discontinued. Like,
yeah.
They're not going to do it.
We'll see. We'll see on that. Let's do what we promised we would do, I think last week, and start making our wish list, not predictions, but wish list for Apple platforms at WWDC. We're going to start this week with tvOS. What's your wish list for tvOS 12?
Now, I don't know yours. We've done this like secretly.
We have. Yeah.
So we probably match on a few of these.
Uh-huh.
Picture in picture.
Yeah, I got that on my list.
Yeah, obvious.
Obvious.
I mean, some apps do it already. Like
they do it on iPad. They do it on Mac.
That does four screens, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just take what you can do on the iPad, where you can have like a Plex video player playing in the corner while you browse the rest of the operating system, and then it can just be one video at a time, and then you play something new, and it gets swapped out, mm-hmm. or you can go back and make it full screen.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
I don't think it needs to be any more complicated than that.
Yeah.
I want an Apple TV home app.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. I got that on my list.
Yeah. So not relying on Siri.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this mirrors what happened on iOS, where it started with Siri only, and then they added a home app later.
Yeah.
Fully expect that to happen here.
Uh-huh.
And I also think it will come alongside a Mac home app as well. Like they're going to really push it as everywhere, or, you know, universal.
Okay.
I want a news app.
I think that's reasonable. I mean, as a TV, you would have video news.
And in iOS 11.3, they added major new sections of the news app to focus on video content.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good bet, I would think.
Yeah, and you could see headlines, and you could scroll through them, and then you can bookmark and it will sync to your phone and you read it there. Like, you're not going to read the whole thing, but if you've got video clips, you can watch them. You can see like the headlines of the big stories customized to you. And there you go. You read it. You carry on your phone, hand off whatever they want.
Yeah, you do a watch later feature. You do hand off. Now, circling back to HomeKit, it wasn't true several years ago that there were HomeKit cameras, video cameras, but now there are at least a few. And the, you know, I've got a few of them. That could be a reason to have the Home app on the Apple TV. There is an app called HomeCam that you can buy and see your Apple TV, your HomeKit video cameras on your Apple TV, but not something built in, like even with Siri, as far as I know. So there's video is the thing for TV. So let's do it. Yeah.
I have a live TV guide.
Okay. Yeah.
So probably integrated as part of the TV app, but, and I know they've done news and sports, but like a proper live TV guide with like real full channels of what's on now, what's on next. You can scroll the list, you can click on one, and ideally it would just play it in the TV app, but we know that's not going to happen. So yeah. You know, catapulted out into the third party app, because a lot of the, at least in the UK, a lot of the video streaming stuff that you pay $10 a month for, they all have some live components, right?
But
you can't see those guides unless you go into each individual app and like weed them out. Yeah, it's a centralized UI to see what's on right now, and you can just start playing it.
Yeah, those apps are getting popular, especially in the US. Like there's Hulu with live TV, there's DirecTV, something. It's not Now or Go, but it's something else. It's a live service. There's PlayStation View, there's Sling, there's YouTube TV now. So what I had in my notes too, which we didn't share ahead of time, was TV app offering a TV guide layer for streaming live services to plug into, and then in parentheses, Hulu UI bad. So right now Hulu integrates with the TV app, but none of the live TV stuff does. Like it doesn't talk to it at all. Like it can't. So it'd be nice if it could.
And my big one, multiple user support.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Why not? Yeah.
I think you could do it where you have iCloud family sharing. That gives you your user accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So when you switch users, you're literally switching iCloud accounts. And then you maybe need like some sort of guest mode where you don't want to, if you know you're going to watch something, but you don't want it to go on like the play history of you. Like if you just got, like for instance, if you have a party, right? And you just want to play some like party music. If you go into a guest mode, then it wouldn't affect your actual recommendations going forward. You know, like the special occasion stuff.
Right.
Or if a friend comes around, they just want to look on something on TV, they could go into a guest mode. I think they could just do this on the home screen.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be like a row where it just says who's the current user. And you wouldn't have like passwords or anything complicated. You just scroll along, click, done. You carry on as you're doing. And maybe if you play something and you haven't changed the account recently, like maybe if you... So, like, what I'm trying to defend against is a situation where I watch something on the TV, and then, like, 3 hours later, someone else in my family sits down and goes to play something. Maybe it, like, reminds you, is this still the same person? Like, that's where it gets a bit, like, inelegant, right? Because it's kind of awkward if you want to play something and ask who it is.
Yeah, the TV app, I never use it on my iPhone or iPad, but I do use it on the Apple TV, and it is what it is on the Apple TV. There's no user accounts, and the Apple TV is a shared product, so everyone's using it, and everyone's content is getting mixed up. All their activity is like in there. But I mean, it would be really nice, and I thought about this and didn't make it on my list, but that's the main reason for users is to have a user for the Apple TV, because for the
separate
TV
watch
app,
list.
Yeah, because like if my family uses the TV app, I get the activity on my TV app on my iPhone and iPad, but their TV app on their iPhone and iPad has none of it, even though they're the one watching. So it makes no sense at all. And then like, I just have to like filter through what's been watched and then like find, oh, is this what I want to watch now? It's like, is this me who was watching it in the TV app? Like, you know, list. Now there is some like kind of support for profiling, like profiles, by like Netflix has it, Hulu has it. Hulu,
but that's like restricted to the app, right?
Well, yeah, but there's Hulu's done a pretty good job where if I click through to a cartoon from the TV app through Hulu, like it's from Hulu, it opens the Hulu app to play it. But Hulu's pretty good about first throwing up a profile screen to say which user is this. Like it doesn't remember who it was that made it go to the TV app. But it at least asks you. So it isn't like the last user that used the Hulu app. It will ask you, which one do you want to use? And then I can pick you know, my kid's name, and then it associates that playback with that user. So at right now, Apple like punts to the app to do it well. I don't know if other apps have that, you know, but it needs to be at the TV app level, if for no other reason that the other members of the family don't get their activity on their TV app, which is like a lot of the point, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like core reason to do it.
Yeah.
And if you have two members in the family watching the same TV show but at different points, or you're watched, you know, things all get messed up, like you have someone in the middle of season one, and season three, and it doesn't know what to watch next, etc., etc., etc.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my final one on my list, no more white icons.
That's really good.
I don't like the change that they've done there. I was looking at my Apple TV the other day, and there was like six white icons on the screen. Undo it, revert it. The whole point of the TVSOU UI is that the parallax depth and layers, and the icons have a background and a foreground and bits that move around. And by putting it on white, you just lose all of the creativity. You lose the depth and the perspective. And it's just like, why are you even bothering with this, you know, 3D icons when you're just going to put a glyph on a white background and be done with it? Like, undo the music app icon, take it back. Photos,
YouTube,
change that one as well.
Like, third-party apps are doing it now.
Third-party apps can go as well. I don't care. Put an app store, a rule in the app store that you can't have a white background.
Give it up. Make it match the UI. For if it's dark mode, it can be black. And if it's white
mode, it's full black, I'm not a fan either. So the TV app can change its one.
Okay.
Gradients, speckles, images. That the TV OS UI is perfect for that. And they're just sapping the life out of it.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm done. What have you got?
You were right that most of yours would be on my list, except for at least one. And but I agree with you about that. I'm going to go through the rest of my list because everything you mentioned except for icons was on it. I'm going to go from the top of what's left. So Dolby Atmos support. And what that is certain surround sound sound bars and surround sound systems are Dolby Atmos, where it sounds like sounds are coming from all over. Like it uses upward audio to make sound more like you're there, and my TV supports it, but you've got to use like it's like certain movies on Netflix from the Netflix TV app. The best thing I could get was like I wanted to watch the movie Baby Driver that has Dolby Atmos support, but I had to use like some rental service to do it and or buy it through them, and I did just to try it out, but I have a lot of movies that would be Dolby Atmos from iTunes if the Apple TV supported it, and they don't yet. And the kicker here is that Nilay Patel of The Verge said Apple told him that they will support it, and they haven't yet.
Was like November, right?
That was when the Apple TV 4K was new. So my hope here is that it's reasonable that iOS or tvOS 12 would be where they support it, and then my soundbar would be upgrade. Like it would take advantage of what it is, which is an LG SJ9 with Dolby Atmos support. Like it has upward facing speakers for a reason, and right now they're not getting used unless I'm using the TV's apps, and it's. You know, it's too bad. Going back to what we talked about with being able to use Siri on an iPhone or HomePod to control content on the Apple TV, for example, you can do that with video podcast, but it's limited to music and podcast apps. So like you can tell Siri on your iPhone to play a CNN video podcast on your Apple TV and it will play the video there, but it doesn't work with like iTunes movies and TV shows, and I don't think it's coming in like tvOS 12, but I'm gonna request it anyway, and I'd say like more likely like tvOS 13 or 14. But the ability to tell Siri on, you know, anywhere or iPhone and HomePod, like play the latest episode of something that you own on you know, or a movie on your Apple TV, and then that work, like play the Avengers on Apple TV in the living room, and you're just telling like HomePod to do it because it's out there and it does that. So that's my request. You can kind of get there with the remote app on your iPhone, because that has like a Siri button that you hold down and then you send the command to your Apple TV. So it's like the devices are right, but the way it works is not the right way.
Yeah, the remote app is so janky.
Yeah, so
using the remote app is like when someone tells you to use workflow as like a solution to a problem.
Yeah. It's not natural. Netflix integration with the TV app, it's not there yet.
Ooh, that's a good one, because it's just a partnership, right?
Like, exactly, yeah.
And last year they did Amazon at WWDC. Mm-hmm. They could say, and now we have Netflix in the queue.
And you can, like, add shows to your watch list in the TV app. And you can use Siri to say, like, show me this show, show me Breaking Bad. And if it's on Netflix, like, you can get there from that UI. And it kind of mixes in, but it's not full. Like, there's no TV integration, really, like there is with Hulu and, you know, iTunes and all these other, you know, providers. What you'd want is, if you watch a show in Netflix, it just shows up in your queue. And, like, you can keep watching it. You can basically ignore the Netflix UI that is, like, wants you to get lost in content and not find what you want to, like, it wants you to discover way more than, like, Resume. And the TV app is pretty good at Resume, you know, where you left off. So Netflix integration, I think tvOS 12 would be a good reason to, like, it's not really a feature of tvOS 12, like, depending on that, but we've seen Apple use, like, marketing features that way of, like, hey, it's tvOS 12, upgrade to it for Netflix integration with the TV app. Do I think it's happening? Probably not. Like, I think it could happen now if it was going to happen, but maybe. And then here's one. I don't know if this is technically possible or anything, like, or if I'm just dreaming, but Night Shift for Apple TV. So, that's like the color temperature changing on your Mac display or your iPhone and iPad display at sunset so that it gets warmer at night. It's easier on the eyes. The white stuff is, like, less harsh and, you know, maybe you get a better night's sleep that way. You can do it with third-party Mac displays, so I don't see why you couldn't do it with TVs too. And some TVs even have settings like energy-saving preferences that adjust the temperature to kind of, like, lower the brightness and maybe change the temperature a little bit. And but it's not based on sunset. It's based on, like, ambient lighting or, like, an always-on mode. But I think if Apple TV could do it, it would be based on, like, sunset and sunrise times. And that's where it's not like it's dark in here because you made it that way, but we want, you know, we want you to encourage you to not use the screen anymore. You know, like, you can make it really ugly, and that's, like, you're telling yourself, go to bed. I don't think
there's any technical limitation to make that happen.
Yeah.
Like, if you just said True Tone, then sure, because you need
special
sensors.
Yeah.
But Night Shift, it's just changing the signal that comes out of the Apple TV's HDMI port for display.
Yeah, so I think they could do it, and, like, maybe it conflicts with, like, the TV settings. Like, if you've got, like, Vibrant turned on, or if you're using, you know, the Dolby Vision mode, like, it almost looks that way anyway. But I think they could maybe do it, and so if it's possible,
they could do it as an advanced feature off by default. Mm-hmm. And it could even say, like, this may interfere with your TV's color settings.
Yeah, like, disclaimer. Which they already do that with Dolby Vision or whatever it's called, where they say, like, if you get a flicker, you know, don't use this. It's really janky, but it's what they have to do because they don't make a TV set, and they should.
TVs don't give them the information they need, like, two-way communication there.
And then the last thing is not actually on the Apple TV itself, but it's about Apple TV, which is an updated TV remote app for the Apple Watch, because they made one for the first the Apple TV second gen and third gen, because they were around at the same time. Like, the watch was new. Apple TV 3 was the current Apple TV. But then with Apple TV 4 and 4K, there are new things like swiping versus, like, one click over, and dictation and Siri. And you can't do any of that from the Apple Watch remote app. It's literally like the version. It's like if you use the iTunes remote app, which I think is like the I don't know, but it's like the old remote app, and you can use it with the old Apple TV, or you can use it with a new one and for, like, a lesser experience. But they need to update, if they care, the remote app on the Apple Watch to do things like, if you move your finger quickly across the screen, then you swipe three spaces instead of one.
This is wish list, right? Not predictions.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Right. Yeah.
I think you're thinking too small.
Really?
The remote app as it is a janky hack of, like, a mouse pad.
Yeah.
What you should be able to do is, if you're on the settings app, just to give a dumb example, on the TV, if you look on your watch, it shouldn't be a D-pad of up, right, left, down. It should have a list of the settings that are on the screen.
Scroll, like, your crown and tap to select.
Like a table cell. Yeah, like table cells, general, network. And you can tap them, you can scroll them. And then if you go into an app, it has controls on there. You can tap and you can scroll them. And maybe they have the D-pad as, like, a fallback.
Uh-huh.
But for, like, if you're on the home screen, you need to choose an app. It should just have a list of the apps on the watch that you can scroll and tap. Same on the iPhone app.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be a D-pad. That's just, like, the easiest way for them to do it. But
I can dig that.
If you were doing it properly, it wouldn't be like that.
Cool. Yeah, I agree with that. If we're making wish list, then
it'd almost be like a CarPlay UI for the Apple TV.
Yeah,
but instead of CarPlay, obviously it's just local, like a remote of what content's available.
It is a video signal of an optimized UI for a certain input, and it's the same thing. Yeah, I agree. I don't have this on my list, but I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there. Some incentive to make apps better. Like the YouTube app got worse. The Hulu app is out of control. It's part of tvOS is developers can do like almost anything. There aren't constraints like there were with, you know, whatever the thing that came before it was. But there's also like major apps are making bad choices. And
right. So whereas WatchKit is too limited and you can't do what you want on tvOS, yeah. It's like iOS. You can draw whatever you want, but people are taking that into like rubbish land and making stuff that doesn't work very nicely.
Yeah. And I get why they're doing it. It's because they're making bad choices on every platform. And so they're making like one app that looks the same, like the Netflix experience is what it is, whether it's your iPad, your TV's app or the Apple TV app, you know, a PlayStation, whatever. But the thing is, it's like they're making bad choices. And yep. I wish Apple wouldn't let them do that. You know,
I think the best answer for Apple to do there is
what?
Make it so that video plays within inside the TV app.
I agree. Yeah.
You control the UI. You can, like, Apple controls the UI of the TV app. They can make it as pretty as they want. You can have your dumb service providers in this folder that you never open. I assume it's some legal contractual thing where they have to jump it out. But even if they start and only have like Hulu on board, right?
Yeah.
Just start it. Just do a couple of them. Mm-hmm. And it made the TV app so much better.
And then you have a choice of using the app.
Bad UIs that all these third-party companies make.
Yeah, then you have a choice. You can use the bad app or use the good app, and it's your choice.
Yeah. Wow, I wonder which one I'll pick.
Yep. So, all right, I think we did a decent job there of taking something that got no features this year and making wishes for what we wish it would get.
Sometimes it may get no features this year.
Yeah. Again, not a prediction, just a wish list, because how could you predict tvOS features? All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach. Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
And also follow 905 Mac. And if you have any feedback, you can give it to us there. You can email us at happyhour@905mac.com. And perfect. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.